This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon. It's Friday afternoon, and this is Eben Fowler with Bot Radio Network. I'm your semi-regular Friday guy, it seems like, for the last few weeks, and it's been a lot of fun being able to sit in for Tony for this broadcast. And so glad that you're along listening all across Bot Radio Network and American Family Stations. It's just great to have you here. The fact that you're listening means that you care about what's going on in this country. And you're probably also prayerful about the things that are going on in this country. And that's extremely important. You know, we need to be praying about what's happening with our leadership, our leaders in D.C. and in the state capitol, for that matter. Anyway, it's good to have you along today. We've got some interesting topics. Again, welcome to Washington Watch. First up on the show today will be Kansas Governor Sam Brownback. He has sent a letter to President Trump asking for pro-life measures similar to those implemented in his state. And Governor Brownback is a great friend of us here at Bot Radio Network. In fact, we talked with him earlier today about this very same topic. And as you get to know him, I think you're going to like him as well. In our second segment, a North Carolina pastor has been detained in Turkey, of all places. Lawmakers are calling for the unconditional release of Andrew Brunson, the pastor. Congressman Russell of Oklahoma will join us to talk about that effort. And did you notice the stark difference in how Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was received at the White House earlier this week? President Trump welcomed him warmly at the front door rather than President Obama's chilly greeting at the White House back door. Susan Michael is the U.S. Director of the International Christian Embassy in Jerusalem, and she'll join us later in the show. And, of course, we'll be taking your calls. Love to hear from our listeners. You always have great calls. So I'll give you that phone number later on in the program. Just hang in there with us. And also, we'll learn what the International Christian Embassy is. I know a little bit about it. I've heard about it, but we want to get up to speed on what they've been up to. Well, Kansas Governor Sam Brownback sent a letter today calling on President Donald Trump, Speaker Paul Ryan, and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell to enact pro-life laws similar to those already passed and signed in the Sunflower State. That's Kansas, by the way, if you didn't know that. With us now is Governor Sam Brownback to talk about that letter. Governor, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, it's a pleasure to join you, and thank you for having me on your show.
Absolutely. Well, I wish it was my show. It's actually Tony's. He just lets me sit in from time to time. But anyway, you may have heard in the intro to the show that you're a great friend of Bot Radio Network, and we have opportunities. Yes. You gave us almost a half an hour of your time this afternoon, no doubt. We were one of many folks who were inquiring about this letter that you sent to the president, the speaker, and the Senate majority leader. So, first of all, tell us a little bit about your pro-life track record not only in the state of Kansas, but in general, when you were in the Senate and before that.
Well, I've been a strong and staunch proponent of life. I think it's one of the just incredible issues of our day that we have to solve and have to get right. Roe v. Wade needs to be overturned. Gorsuch is a great nominee to put in front of the U.S. Supreme Court. It needs to be confirmed. And I think you should really survey the issue agenda facing the United States and our individual states. The right to life is right there at the top of it. And we've just got to get it right. And we haven't, but now we've got an opportunity really to change that dynamic, and to get it right federally and to get it right in our states. And I think this is a moment we really have to seize.
Well, let me take a moment to read the first paragraph of your letter, Governor. It says, "There are few things more essential to the identity of America than the rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The most fundamental of these natural rights is listed first, the right to life. A prerequisite for all other human rights, life is a gift endowed by our Creator. But this unalienable right is not equally protected for all our citizens. The youngest, smallest, and most vulnerable among us are suffering. The unborn children of America deserve a chance at life. Their inherent right to life is no less valid than ours. and now is the time for the federal government to take action on their behalf. So thus begins your letter sent today to the President, the Speaker of the House, and the Senate Majority Leader. First of all, why did you write the letter? And secondly, why now?
I wrote it because I think this is the agenda that we need to pursue now. I've been in the Congress when you have a new administration. I've been in the Congress when you have a Republican lineup. That first year is your most potent legislative year, but you have to pick targets. You have to decide which ones you're willing to pursue. The Democrats are doing everything they can to really slow things down, slow the appointment process down. But here is an agenda that really speaks to the very nature of America. It's a clear dichotomy that we have with the Democrat side, but the American public is with us. They are pro-life. And I think it needs to really be bounced up into the agenda of this first year. And then I listed a number of specific items that I think they should do. Defund Planned Parenthood, ban sex selection abortions. I think they should ban dismemberment abortions where the child is taken apart in the abortion process. I think they should ban abortions after the point in time when the child is capable of feeling pain, which is roughly at around 20 weeks, maybe a little earlier, but at least at 20 weeks. Those are, I think, just things that identify with a compassionate American society that wants to treat its children well, and we need to start protecting their lives.
Now, the governor of Pennsylvania, in contrast to where you stand, Governor Brownback, Governor Tom Wolf, is threatening to veto a state Senate bill that bans abortions after 20 weeks. He made the announcement yesterday at a news conference in Philadelphia. And listen to this, saying the state cannot be a place where women can't make their own health care decisions. Would you comment on that last line that he says the state cannot be a place where women can't make their own health care decisions?
Well, once that child is born physically, does the woman have a choice then whether or not the child should be destroyed or killed? The child is considered a separate individual. It's a separate genetic individual, still very dependent upon people. And I look at this and I say, you know, we should stand and protect life. And then our debate has always been, when does that life begin? And I'm saying by these clear science now, we know it's a separate genetic body and entity and person. And I'm saying by this letter, at least don't dismember the child. Don't inflict an abortion in a painful way when the child can feel pain. And don't do an abortion to sex selection. Now, I'm opposed to abortion other than cases of life of the mother. But I'm casting here a narrower agenda for the federal government, and I think it also is an educational agenda for the American public, that these things actually happen in their country. The children are actually torn apart in an abortion, in certain types of abortion procedures, and this is wrong. And it shouldn't be a part of a civil society, whether it's in Pennsylvania or Kansas or anywhere else in America.
That's right. And as you said, you know, you and I are in total agreement on in terms of abortion is life of the mother is the only exception. And, you know, you mentioned just a few minutes ago, too, that the repeal of Roe versus Wade is something that we need to set as an objective. Now, of course, the other side, and I want to say the other side, I mean those folks who are not inclined to support life in the way that you and I and many others are, begin to howl at the suggestion of that because it's been around now for 44 years and is seen as a right. And, you know, it's completely misunderstood. They have, you know, with the advances in science, as it mentions in your letter, with ultrasound, it's so clear that, you know, that little life in there it's a person. And, yes. You know, just logically speaking, it starts somewhere. And then the question is, among those who want to debate it is, well, when does life begin? Well, we know. It's logical. We didn't need an ultrasound to show us that. Well, Governor, you also are on President Trump's pro-life coalition. Tell us a little bit about what that entails and the kind of work that you think you're going to be doing going forward.
Well, what I hope it entails is pushing this agenda that's pro-life that the president ran on. And he was the most clear-spoken presidential candidate we have had since Roe v. Wade to stand for life and to call for the repeal of Roe. So what we're going to continue to do, and I'm going to continue to push, is this aggressive pro-life agenda. And we need to do so to really educate the American public about this, who is pro-life. So I want us to do it and to do these things moving forward on things. And let's have a big discussion about what is a dismemberment abortion where the child is pulled apart. Does that really happen? What, how many times does it happen in the country? And so that you really educate the American public about this, because you have to change hearts and minds before you can change votes. And thankfully, that's been happening in this country, and where the country has now moved to be pro-life, particularly younger people are pro-life. You know, as they see the ultrasounds and then they hear about some of these barbaric practices, they're going, no, I don't want any piece of it. And then finally, this doesn't mean that you don't care for the child. I remember Mother Teresa being at a national prayer breakfast and looking at Bill Clinton and saying, don't kill your children. Give them to me. I'll take care of them. You know, we can take care of them. My family's adopted 2 children, and they've been great blessings to us. We can take care of these children in this country. They don't need to be destroyed.
Well, there was a mention also in your letter that says, substantiated by a recent report from the Select Investigative Panel of the Energy and Commerce Committee in the U.S. House of Representatives, Planned Parenthood is breaking the law and should not receive federal funding. I would go further than that and say somebody needs to be looking at prosecuting some people there. Tell us about that. What's the status of that particular report, and do you know what kind of recommendations they're making other than, of course, defunding?
The panel was impaneled to look at the evidence that was put forward, the video evidence of Planned Parenthood selling baby body parts, which is a violation of federal law, and yet was being kind of just ignored, well, was ignored by the Obama administration, Justice Department, and others. So the panel was put in place to see, did this actually happen? And their report came out saying, yes, it did happen. Well, now you need to take that the next step forward. And I think one of the clear next step forwards is defund Planned Parenthood, which, by the way, they would argue, Planned Parenthood, that, well, nobody else can take care of the other issues of women's health, like mammograms and things of that nature. There are other places to be able to provide women's health other than abortions, and it's not Planned Parenthood. It's other institutions. We did that in Kansas when we defunded Planned Parenthood. But then the Obama administration said, well, if you're not going to give the money to Planned Parenthood, we're going to take all Title X money from you altogether, and did. Now the Congress is acting to overturn that regulation, and so hopefully we'll be able to have the Title X money, but won't be sending it to Planned Parenthood.
Well, you know, what you mentioned about Planned Parenthood providing health services, that's really bogus anyway. You know, they have these signs that are up on the sides of their buildings, at least on the one in the kind of the local clinic here that said, health care happens here. No, it doesn't. You know, they do a few things like distribute birth control and maybe pap smears, but they are certainly not comprehensive health. Their main business is abortion, because that's where they make the big dollars. Well, Governor Brownback, thanks so much for your great work and for taking your time out of a very busy day, I'm sure.
Happy to do it. God bless you. And I hope folks are contacting their members of Congress and Senate about pushing forward this pro-life agenda. And I hope they're praying for the president, too. He's under a lot of pressure.
Absolutely.
He needs some prayers.
Absolutely. Thank you, Governor Brownback. Let's pray for the governor as well. Well, coming up next, a North Carolina pastor is being detained in Turkey, and members of Congress are calling for his release. One such member is Congressman Steve Russell of Oklahoma. He'll be with us after the break to talk about it. You're listening to Washington Watch.
One of the great freedoms that most Americans enjoy is the ability to get involved in political campaigns. But what about pastors? Unfortunately, due to a little-known amendment that was passed in 1954 at President Lyndon Johnson's urging, churches and other nonprofit organizations are prohibited from making statements for or against a candidate for public office if they want to remain tax-exempt. This is just one of the many problems with the Johnson Amendment. Not only does fear of IRS action put a chill on the free speech of pastors, it restrains other nonprofit organizations from participating in the debate of public policy in their area of expertise. In addition, the IRS only rarely enforces the Johnson Amendment, causing widespread confusion about what constitutes lawful political speech and what doesn't. For more information on how to amend the Johnson Amendment, visit frc.org/johnsonamendment. That's frc.org/Johnson Amendment.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. In America, millions of babies have been sacrificed on the altar of convenience. In Old Testament times, babies were sacrificed on the altar of Moloch. Read Leviticus 20 and discover not only how serious the killing of babies is to God, but also those who hide their eyes to this evil. In his Family Worship Guide, Dr. Joel Beakey contrasts the horrendous act of infant sacrifice to the beautiful account of Jesus blessing infants. As Beakey writes, how can we stand for children today against those who would sacrifice them to the gods of pleasure, money, and selfish ambition? One way is to urge Congress to defund Planned Parenthood, the nation's largest abortion chain. Call your representatives at 202-224-3121. Urge them to defund Planned Parenthood. Call 202-224-3121. Let us stand for the precious lives of the unborn. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
Hey, I'm Brant. So there's this family, Jeremy and Sharon, and a couple kids, and they're all very healthy, and they did something to save money. They switched from health insurance to MediShare, and then they had a third baby, a little girl named Anya, and she was very sick.
We've had a lot of hospital visits.
A whole week in a children's hospital, CAT scans and blood tests and chemical tests, and I think we saw a dozen doctors. It was all shared.
Yeah, the bills were shared by the other members of MediShare. That's how this works. So get this, they save hundreds a month. They don't have to deal with health insurance companies or government health care plans. And they get to be part of a community that cares.
MediShare has always been there for us and helped meet the needs that we have as a family.
It's no wonder this is growing so fast. It is worth looking into. Here's how. Call 855-PSALM-23. Now, it's available everywhere but Montana. 855-PSALM-23.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Eben Fowler with Bot Radio Network sitting in for Tony Perkins on this Friday afternoon. Again, good to have you along. So here shortly, we hope to have Representative Steve Russell on the line to talk about this pastor who has been detained in Turkey. A couple of other notes about the last interview that I had with Governor Sam Brownback that I wanted to mention. By the way, if you're listening in Pennsylvania, you might get on the phone and call the governor's office. As I mentioned, Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf is threatening to veto a state Senate bill banning abortions after 20 weeks. He made that announcement yesterday at a news conference in Philadelphia, saying the state cannot be a place where women can't make their own health care decisions. So I don't know that's really what's involved there. The current law allows the procedure until 24 weeks. The bill passed the Senate last week and is now on its way to the House. So if it passes in the House, and you might call your representatives in Pennsylvania, because the Senate got the job done. By the way, it just backs it up 4 weeks. So I don't know if the governor there thinks that women can't make their own health care decisions now after 24 weeks. But anyway, that being what it is. Also, another interesting point, and I didn't get a chance to talk with Governor Brownback about this, but he has been quoted as saying Kansas is pro-life and we're not going back, because at one time, you may or may not be aware that Kansas was considered the abortion capital of the nation, because they did late term abortions down in Wichita. Fortunately, that's not happening anymore. And, you know, leadership makes the difference. It really does. And whether it's at the state level, even the local level, but certainly the national level as well. And I think we're seeing that change. All right. Well, let's get into our next topic. Leaders of the Senate Foreign Relations and House Foreign Affairs Committee are calling for the unconditional release of American pastor Andrew Brunson, who has been unjustly detained in Turkey since last October. With us now is Congressman Steve Russell, representing the 5th Congressional District of Oklahoma. Representative Russell, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Tony. It's great to be with you.
Well, this is Eben. I'm filling in for Tony today. They probably didn't tell you that,
great.
this, here's what you got. So we do appreciate you coming on board. And first of all, give us a quick background on what the current state of affairs is in terms of the relationship, at least from your perspective, between the United States and Turkey.
Well, they are a NATO ally, and it's a very strong relationship. You know, Turkey fought side by side with us in the Korean War. They have been a strong partner with us on nuclear deterrence. We have bases that are in Turkey where there are U.S. bases. We have aided them. They have aided us. It's been a long, strong relationship. A lot of concerns, you know, with things that have been going on. And I was just there in December with Senator James Lankford, and we asked specifically about this issue with their foreign minister and others. And we wanted some answers. We wanted Mr. Brunson's immediate release. And we had also asked that, look, okay, if you've not shown him the charges and you haven't listed what it is, then allow him to be put under house arrest and post bail. And so we did get some traction on that, you know, at least that they were considering it. So that was a positive first step. But he needs to be released. This, we believe, was a clear case where he was, you know, they did not have anything significant to tie him to anything related to terrorism. We think it was because he was a pastor.
Well, my understanding is that Pastor Brunson has been in Turkey working peacefully since about 1993. Is that right?
That is correct.
And so they didn't give you any sense of what he may have done that required them to detain him?
When we had asked about it, they had relayed for the first time. In fact, it was a breakthrough because for the first time we heard, and the people that were trying to work within Turkey heard what the charges may be. And it was something that he had been connected to those and aiding those that were committing acts of terror. You know, that was news to the Brunsons, I'm sure, but at least they had come out with some of the concerns, and so that was a breakthrough of sorts.
Let me read kind of the next to last paragraph in this letter that was sent actually on the 15th of this month. In this spirit of partnership, we respectfully ask you to consider Mr. Brunson's case and how the recent treatment of Mr. Brunson places significant strain not only on him and his family, but also on the robust bilateral relationship between the United States and Turkey. So in the last minute or so here, Representative, have you gotten any response back on this letter? I know it's only been a couple of days.
No, we haven't, but we're going to continue to push it. And we also relayed, again, that Turkey is our NATO ally. You know, we want to be cooperative with all of this, but we certainly believe that Pastor Brunson can be released on bail and house arrest. His wife is still there, as she knows that by staying, she will have much more chance of contact and getting things resolved than if she did not. So we certainly need to lift him up, and we need to continue to pray for his family, and we need to pray for a resolution on this. We're not going to let this go. We're going to continue to push and have pressure.
And just as kind of a final note here, Representative Russell, your colleague from Oklahoma, Scott Pruitt, was just confirmed as the head of the EPA. He's been the attorney general since 2011. Just your quick thoughts on what do you think his leadership's going to look like at EPA?
I love it. Scott's a great guy. I know him. He's a personal friend. America needs to be very grateful. We have someone there that will get the torturous types of progressive policies off of people's backs, and we can get back to business, and we can get back to doing things that allow Americans to innovate.
That's right. And I'm guessing that he's not an enemy of the environment, as some people might portray him. What do you
think? He's absolutely not. In fact, you know, he, working with our corporation commissioners, has been very concerned about those things. But he's also not an advocate of stupidity and false science and a number of other things where we've seen ideologies seep into agencies, creating things that ought to be the purview of Congress and law.
That's right. Well, it's going to be refreshing to have that kind of leadership at the EPA.
It sure will. He's awesome.
Yeah.
America's going to love him.
That's great. Representative.
Well, they've got a right to be wrong on Scott Pruitt.
That's right. Well, Representative Russell, thanks for taking time today, and thanks for your leadership. We appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you.
Coming up next, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu received a warm welcome from the Trump administration. We're going to be talking about that with Susan Michael, U.S. Director of the International Christian Embassy, Jerusalem. Coming up here in just a moment.
Making the most of your money, here's Dan Celia.
A number of things happening probably over the next 7 days. We're going to see some more movement in the market, maybe some positive movement, I hope. But certainly we are going to continue to see an abundance of enthusiasm and confidence in and around the President of the United States. The enthusiasm and confidence that he is building in the private sector is nothing short of amazing. And as long as we keep the GOP alongside of him in this, I think this is going to be very good for the long-term effect of the economy. OPEC announced that it was going to possibly extend by 3 months the time period in which they were going to keep production lower or step up production cuts to increase these cuts even deeper. That's very good news. That's going to be some good news for oil as we see oil moderately going up in hopes that this is going to be a possibility. Gold notches its highest finish in more than 3 months as the dollar is growing weaker, and we continue to see the possibility of the dollar growing weaker over the next 7 or 8 days, but probably not going to last very long. We can almost guarantee there's going to be an increase in March from the Fed. That, of course, is a dollar strengthening move. So we'll see that possibly these gains in gold being given back.
Experience Dan Celia in person. Find a faith, family, and finance town hall meeting or seminar near you at afafoundation.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Evan Fowler here, sitting in for Tony Perkins on this beautiful Friday afternoon. At least it's beautiful here in Kansas City. Temperatures in the low 70s. I don't know what it's like in the rest of the country. Maybe if you're in North Dakota, it's not quite that nice. But anyway, it's a nice break from winter weather. Well, first of all, let me tell you a little bit, just get a little business out of the way here. FRC.org, that's the website to go to learn more about Family Research Council, FRC.org. They have great resources there. You can sign up for their daily email brief that gives you a quick look at what's going on in Washington and the stuff that, yes, it does affect your life out here, wherever you happen to be. And if you're a Twitterer, one of those Twitter-type people, at T. Perkins is the Twitter handle if you want to subscribe to Tony Perkins' feed and learn even more stuff. Well, we're going to be talking with Susan Michael, the U.S. Director of the International Christian Embassy Jerusalem, here in just a moment. But before we do that, I want to play a sound clip. It's a montage of Benjamin Netanyahu and Donald Trump here just a couple of days ago and some of the things that were said at a news conference. So if you would, Jonathan, roll that.
Israel has no better ally than the United States. And I want to assure you, the United States has no better ally than Israel.
The partnership between our two countries, built on our shared values, has advanced the cause of human freedom, dignity, and peace.
Our alliance has been remarkably strong, but under your leadership, I'm confident it will get even stronger.
As far as settlements, I'd like to see you hold back on settlements for a little bit. We'll work something out, but I would like to see a deal be made. I think a deal will be made.
The Palestinians must recognize the Jewish state. They have to stop calling for Israel's destruction. They have to stop educating their people for Israel's destruction.
Well, as you can tell, that meeting and that conversation, that back and forth, was a drastic departure from the chilly reception that Benjamin Netanyahu received from the Obama administration. And once again, it's refreshing to see this kind of thing going on with our relationship with Israel. Well, here to help us sort out some of the issues facing the two nations is Susan Michael. She is the U.S. Director of the International Christian Embassy, Jerusalem. Susan, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, Evan, thank you very much. I'm happy to be with you and to speak with your audience. Tony is a great friend and a great supporter of Israel, so we're very happy to have this time with you and your audience.
Well, we're very fortunate because you're going to be sticking with us through most of the rest of the broadcast. And at the break, just before the break, we'll give the phone number so that our listeners can call in and chat with you and ask you any questions they might want to, as well as talk about some of the topics we discussed earlier. But first of all, for those of our listeners who are not familiar with the International Christian Embassy Jerusalem, tell us what it is, what it does.
Well, it's very interesting in light of today's current events and the hot topics. Because in 1980, when the Israeli government actually put into law that all of Jerusalem was the eternal and undivided capital of the State of Israel, there was tremendous international uproar against it, and all of the embassies that were located in Jerusalem packed up and moved out of the city. So there were a group of Christians living there for various reasons, but they seized the moment, and they said, we do not support what our governments have done, and therefore we're starting an international Christian embassy in Jerusalem that represents the millions of Bible-believing Christians around the world who understand the significance of Jerusalem to the Jewish people and stand with Israel at this moment. So that's how we got started in 1980 and why we have the name of an embassy. But for most of those 37 years, we've actually been the only embassy in Jerusalem. And we've been there representing your audience all these years to the people of Israel, letting them know that Christians support them and Christians love them. And we do that in various ways, through practical assistance, humanitarian aid. We help with immigration of Jews to Israel. We have partnerships in Israel with government institutions. And there's many ways that we express that support. And then we have branches in 86 countries. So I'm the director for the United States branch, and out in the branches, we are not only building support for our work in Israel, but we spend a lot of time educating and speaking in churches, and we have a whole array of educational tools, and of course, advocacy. When we need to take a stand on behalf of Israel in the public square, we're there to do that. So that in a nutshell, is the really unique ministry of the International Christian Embassy Jerusalem.
Well, since I'm thinking about it now, I'm going to ask you, what is your web address? Because if folks want to learn more about what you're doing, how will they find out?
Go to icejusa.org. That's icejusa.org.
As in International Christian Embassy Jerusalem, USA.org. So thanks for that.
Right.
Sometimes we just wait till the end, but I thought we'll mention that again, folks, if you want to write that down. Well, we're going to break here in just about a minute, and what I want to do is talk more about the relationship between the United States and Israel, how it's looking now, you know, based on that montage that we heard just a couple of minutes ago. Want to get your impression of where it's going and what it looks like. And then I also want to talk a little bit more about this move of the U.S. Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, why that's important. So if you'll hang with us, we'll do that when we get back. Anyway, Susan Michael, U.S. Director of the International Christian Embassy Jerusalem, is our guest for this segment of the broadcast. I'm going to give you the phone number so that you can call in and ask her questions and talk about any of the other topics we've discussed today. That phone number is 866-372-7234. Let me give it to you one more time, 866-372-7234. You're listening to the Washington Watch broadcast. Evan Fowler in for Tony Perkins today. Stick with us. We'll be back in about 3 minutes.
It is interesting that in our nation's capital, Washington, D.C., the first and last rays of sunlight fall every day upon its tallest building, the 555-foot Washington Monument. And there on its top, inscribed on the four-sided aluminum capstone, are the Latin words Laos Deo, which means praise be to God. This simple expression of praise reflects America's abiding belief that God has blessed our country with liberty and divine favor. Hello, everyone. Tim Wildman again. We're going to Washington, D.C., our nation's capital, for our spiritual heritage tours in June and September, and we'll see this Washington Monument. That's only one of the many monuments and places we'll see. Stephen McDowell of the Providence Foundation will lead the way as we talk about the places, the time, the events, and the people of our early American Christian heritage. For more information, visit the website spiritualheritagetours.com. That's spiritualheritagetours.com.
Sandy Rios in the morning.
This is a time of madness. It really is. This is from the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby. He said, evil attacks the weakest, denies truth and love, is defeated through Jesus Christ. And I just love that. Evil is defeated through Jesus Christ. And so let's not be afraid. And if you are afraid, then, you know, make yourself right with God.
Sandy Rios in the morning. Weekday mornings at 7 Central on American Family Radio.
Is God calling you to pursue theological graduate education? What's keeping you from taking the first step? Is it time? What if you could choose from flexible class options? Is it money? What if competitively priced seminary offered academic scholarships? Do you think you're alone? What if your classmates were just like you, balancing careers and families with seminary? Hello, I'm Dr. John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi. Take the first step. Visit wbs.edu.
Hello, I'm Ed Vitagliano, co-host of Today's Issues each weekday morning on American Family Radio. I'm also executive vice president of American Family Association, the parent ministry of AFR. I just want to welcome the many new listeners to the AFR family as we have expanded into several new areas over the past 6 months. Who pays for AFR to stay on the air, you might be asking? Well, the answer is simple. AFR depends on our listeners to make financial contributions so that we can keep our radio stations on the air. If you appreciate the news, talk, information, and inspiration that you receive from AFR each day, we ask that you remember us financially when funds allow. You can make a donation at AFR.net or by calling 800-FAMILIES extension 2. That's AFR.net or 800-FAMILIES. Please keep us in your prayers as we continue to impact America for Christ.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Evan Fowler sitting in today for Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along as well. The phone number, 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. We've got a couple of folks holding on. Just hang in there with us. David and Becky will hopefully get your calls here in just a few minutes. Our guest today at this in this segment, Susan Michael, the U.S. Director of the International Christian Embassy Jerusalem. Susan, I wanted to ask you about the significance of the move, or at least the proposed move, of our U.S. Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. Why is that important, and do you think it's going to happen?
Well, I do think it's going to happen, and I certainly hope it's going to happen. The significance of that move is that it rights an injustice that's been perpetrated in our foreign policy over the last 22 years. And that is that in 1995, the U.S. Congress passed the Jerusalem Embassy Act, and it recognizes Jerusalem as the capital and called for the embassy to be moved there. But they put into it a waiver clause. So every 6 months, each president since 1995 has signed that waiver, waiving the implementation of the law. And so Israel is the only country in the world where we do not put our embassy in their self-declared capital. And that's just wrong. It's an injustice, and we need to right that. And no one thinks that Israel is going to give up West Jerusalem, so they should at least move the embassy to West Jerusalem in recognition of it being the capital of Israel.
One of the things also that President Trump called on Israel to do, and this was in the montage that we heard just a little while ago, is to slow down the development of settlements. And, of course, that has been a big controversial issue, apparently, with respect to sitting down and trying to hammer out some kind of a peace situation. What are your thoughts about his comment and just that whole issue of settlements and how it impinges on those discussions?
Well, you know, I think what he's doing is dialing back a bit and returning to the policy that we had under George W. Bush. And that is that they recognize that certain key settlements will remain with Israel after any negotiation has been concluded. And therefore, they're just opposed to any new settlements. And the fact of the matter is that over the last decade, Israel has not built any new settlements. It's just that our news media will use that wording and make people think that that's what Israel's doing, when all they're doing is actually building apartments or houses inside an existing settlement. Now, there are some illegal outposts that have been established, but it's against Israeli policy. And the Israeli government is sort of sometimes it's criticized for not acting against those illegal outposts forcefully enough, that they sort of let the court system take care of it. So I'm not saying that the settlements are without controversy. They are. But there are many legal scholars that are on the side of the settlements actually not being illegal at all. And so Trump is, I think, dialing back and not calling them illegal, but just saying that he's opposed to more settlements being established. That's
yeah, which, you know, yeah, which may help things cool off just a little bit. Well, we're talking with Susan Michael, the U.S. Director of the International Christian Embassy, Jerusalem. Susan, kind of give us your gauge of pre-Trump and post-Trump relationship between Israel and the United States. In other words, I think most people know the answer to this question, but from your perspective with the organization you work with, what was it like under the Obama administration, and what's it looking like now that President Trump has been in office for about a month?
Well, you know, we have to be honest. Under the Obama administration, we still had a good deal of cooperation with Israel in terms of intelligence, and security, military. Some of that, and maybe all of it, at least most of it, had been approved before Obama, but he didn't interfere with that. So we still were a friend to Israel in some regards. But what changed was Obama's cold shoulder to the Prime Minister of Israel, and then, as you know, on December 23rd, just betrayed Israel altogether and allowed an anti-Israel resolution to go through the UN Security Council. So there was definitely a coldness in the relationship. He was very cold towards Netanyahu, and it was very, very tense. Now we feel a lot like you feel today in Kansas with 70-degree weather. We feel like the winter is over, the spring has come, and it's a whole new season. A very warm friendship and cooperation will just accelerate and go into many more other areas such as cybersecurity, energy. We will have Israel's back at the United Nations. In fact, I believe we will actually threaten to defund the UN if they don't stop this biased action against Israel.
Right.
So we're going to be a very, very strong friend to Israel.
Well, that's fantastic. Well, Susan, we're going to take a couple of calls here. The phone number is 866-372-7234 if you want to jump on board. 866-372-7234. David is on the line from Kansas. David, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate you taking my call, and I do appreciate your program. A lot of insight and the conservative viewpoint versus the worldview of you know, the other side, and I do appreciate the contact and the opportunity to ask a question or two. I guess I am thankful that Trump, President Trump, is, you know, going to be a friend of Israel, and I think it's known that he was a friend of Israel before he was even running for president, and I hope that he will continue that, and that, you know, throughout his presidency. My question, I guess, is dealing with, I know the Bible teaches the Antichrist is going to be coming on the scene. He's going to befriend Israel, and then 3.5 years later, he will break that covenant. So I guess my question is, what is your thoughts on that for Susan? And then as well as, what is the reason that so many people dislike the Jews? I know that. Why are they so concerned about this situation in, you know, in the Middle East, and other situations are left undone and not taken care of? But it seems like even President Obama, in the last few days of his presidency, was making, you know, legislation or executive orders concerning Israel, and I'm not sure why this is such a hot spot. I kind of know the reason, but it's just there's so many other nations that are having conflicts. So those are my two questions.
Thanks, Dave. Appreciate you calling. Susan, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, look, excellent questions. The short answer is the reason that the world is so obsessed with the Jews and why there's such hatred and animosity towards them is simply because of the battle of good and evil. I mean, there is evil in the world. And it goes back to Genesis 12, when the world was destined for hell. I mean, we were destined for a very, very dark place with no hope. And that's the day God spoke to Abraham, and he announced his plan of world redemption. And he said, through you, I'm going to build a great nation, and what I'm going to do through you is going to bless all the families of the earth. And the Apostle Paul said that was the first preaching of the gospel. So this is about redemption through Christ that would be brought about through the children of Abraham. And from that day, I believe that the powers of evil were set against them, knowing that if they could destroy that people, they could destroy God's plan. Because at the end of the book, we know that when Christ returns in his fullness, that the powers of the devil are destroyed. It's over. It comes to an end. And so if they can destroy Israel, the Jewish people, they stop that final chapter in history. And that really is the only explanation that makes any sense, because we have centuries and centuries and centuries of hatred and discrimination and persecution and threats of annihilation, unlike any other people group on the face of the earth. And anti-Semitism raises its head with a new name, a new face, with every generation, it seems. And right now, today, the new face of anti-Semitism is a political face. It's called anti-Zionism. And so we no longer hate the Jews because of race or religion. It's now because of politics, because of the state of Israel. But if you dig down, it's nothing but that age-old anti-Semitism.
And that's right. That's right.
I just want to make one more comment, because I know you can go on for hours answering those questions. But the world's obsession with Israel is actually a fulfillment of Scripture, because in Isaiah 11, it says that God would raise his hand a second time and regather the outcasts of Israel back to the land. And in doing so, he's raising a banner to the nations. And he's telling the nations, I am a faithful, covenant-keeping God. And the only way he can get that banner, that message to the nations, is that they're looking at Israel. So in a way, it's a fulfillment of prophecy, and he's using it at the end.
The number is 866-372-7234. Becky is on the line from Alabama. Becky, thanks for joining us on Washington Watch today.
Thank you. This has just been so interesting, and I appreciate your program and all that you do for the Lord. I would just like to say, back at the very end of the primaries, when there was just a few left, you know, to run, I got some information some forms to fill out from the government. And one part of it was talking about all the things that were wrong in America, and to check those things that you thought needed to be dealt with. Well, it was like our debt. It was like illegal aliens. It was like our school systems, the Common Core. It was all this stuff. And so I just checked every one of them. It's about 15 or 20 of them. And, you know, we needed help with every one of them. And I was real proud of myself when I got through, but I think this is where your flesh and your spirit comes in. My flesh was real thrilled that I had checked every one of them. But then there was a line underneath there that said comments, and the spirit spoke to me, and he said right there that if you pray for the peace of Jerusalem and support Israel, all of these others will be taken care of. And I thought, I mean, it was just like a door opened. It was like the peace of Jerusalem, and he told me the peace of Jerusalem is Jesus. You pray for the peace of Jerusalem. He's going to come. He's going to take care of them. And when you do that, when you agree to do that and support them, all of these other things will be taken care of. I thought it was awesome.
Amen. Amen. And that goes back to Genesis 12:3, where he told Abraham, I'll bless those that bless you. And the reason he said that is because by blessing them, we're blessing God's choice and God's plan to redeem the world in the way he has chosen to carry out that plan. So we want to be on the right side of that equation. We want to bless what God is doing. So amen to that.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks, Becky, so much for your call. You know, and that's the thing that, those folks, you know, if you're not biblically literate and you don't understand that that crucial piece, which is, you know, we need to be a friend to Israel, that can get you in all kinds of trouble, can't it?
Yes, it's getting your right, your worldview right, and that's Israel's right at the center of it.
Absolutely. Well, let's just jump one more call in here. I've got Sid on the line from Texas. Sid, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, how are you doing, Mr. Evans?
Doing well, thank you.
And thank you so much for taking my call. So I really just wanted to echo the first caller, and from what I know about Scripture, that Jerusalem, I think it was worded as, will be a cup of trembling. And I just noticed from the way I've been taught, it's just that that's going to be a place of focus, that the world won't be able to take their eyes or their attention off of Israel. And also, I just wanted to make a question to your guest today about Jewish Christians. I've been blessed to meet some people from Galilee, and they were telling me, you know, about, you know, I guess that there aren't a lot of Christians, you know, that are Jewish, and or just that there is a struggle you know, with being Christian and being Jewish. And I just wanted to get insight on how she sees that daily, or is there a lot of people coming to Christ in Jerusalem that are Jewish? And I know in the end days that's going to be inevitable. There's going to be a large amount of people coming to Christ, echoing the first caller about the Antichrist and everything. You know, they're going to realize they've been betrayed and then, you know, learn about the Lord. But I just wanted to pretty much get her insight, like a real-time picture on how many people are actually coming to Christ there in the city.
Very good. Thank you, Sid. What do you think about that, Susan?
Sure. Well, to your first point, you're absolutely right about Jerusalem being the center of attention and that the nations are actually going to be gathered against it, and that means to determine who has it. And we see that being fulfilled. We see how easily that's going to be fulfilled. So that you're absolutely right about that. Yes, there are Jews who believe in Jesus. It's been, of course, there's always been a few throughout history, but it's become more of a movement since about 1967. And it's still a small number, but it is growing, and it's a growing number in Israel, but also around the world. And they're often called Messianic Jews, Messianic meaning that they're Jews that believe in Jesus. So it's a small, and you could say struggling movement in some ways, but it is a growing one.
Very good. Well, Susan Michael, U.S. Director of International Christian Embassy Jerusalem, thanks so much. We've enjoyed the conversation with you and your insight as well.
Well, thank you very much. It's great to be with you.
Well, folks, we're at the end of another Washington Watch Hour here. So glad that you all joined us today. Remember FRC.org and Tony's Twitter handle at T Perkins. This is Eben Fowler again sitting in for Tony this afternoon. Thanks for joining us on this edition of Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.